Good day from Wall Street. This is Jack Marks for Wall Street Reporter, and today I am happy to have back with us Andy Williams, CEO of Medicine Man Technologies, one of our next Superstock Conference presenters. Andy, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Jack. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Always good to have you back, Andy. So, you know, we're coming up on really the end of 2019 here. We're already, you know, first week of November. And really this has been, you know, it's been a transformational year for Medicine Man. You have so much has happened since, you know, we first interviewed you almost 11 months ago. So, you know, congratulations on, you know, all the progress. And, you know,
I hope you and your listeners are sorry, Jack.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, Andy, investors, you know, they've really kind of gotten hooked on seeing, you know, you announced two acquisitions a week, you know, back in in August, September. And, you know, it's been almost, I don't know, 6-7 weeks since your last announcement. So can you kind of bring us... you know, up to speed on some of the status of the announced deals and, when you're expecting some of these to start closing.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate everyone who's following our stock and anxious to get news. We are violently executing our vision and our strategy. And just because there's not announcements doesn't mean that there's not a ton of work going on behind the scenes. You know, when those announcements happen, of course, we were making a tremendous amount of acquisitions, putting into place the vision that we had and the strategy that we had to achieve it, which was to combine some of the best operators on the planet in terms of the cannabis industry into one company and getting them to agree to join in what we're doing and working towards a vision together. And so, as you know, we have 12 different Colorado operators coming together under the roof of Medicine and Technologies that have world-class expertise, products, and operators in all verticals of the cannabis space, cultivation, manufacturing, products, research, retail. And since that time, our team has been working very closely with all of these pioneers on the M&A activity of due diligence and audits, of course, that have to be done for these transactions to close. And in terms of timing on this, so November 1st was a very important date for our company and for the industry in Colorado, in that the House Bill 191090, which is the legislation that has allowed of cannabis licenses in Colorado and out-of-state ownership, which up to that point hadn't been allowed, became effective November 1st. And on October 31st, new forms were put out by the Marijuana Enforcement Division, the organization in Colorado that enforces the cannabis regulation, for the change of ownership and the suitability or background checks that will have the final regulations have yet to be published. We're expecting them hopefully today. And we're working feverishly to complete all the documentation that we need to submit to the state in order to begin that process of change of ownership. And the government will have 120 days in order to do all the work that they need to do at the state level. We'll also have to work with the local governments in order to accomplish the same thing. We expect to begin closing these transactions in about the March-April timeframe, and we believe to have we'll have them all closed by within the first half of 2020.
Okay, so pretty much the timeframe it's pretty much the same as you've been announcing, you know, all along. You know, first half, 2020. Okay.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun to see a highlight or to hear a highlight reel from you that said, you know, that told the bites of what I said, and then what we they did. And I think if people have been following this, they know that when we say we're going to do something, we do something. We're very good at execution.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, you know, you've delivered on, you know, everything you've said, and the timing. You know, it's pretty much you've delivered on the timing. So the closing stays around the same. Now, you know, I think that there's a little bit of a phone delay. I think the connection is a little rough. You were saying essentially right now you're waiting for, you know, the government approval, you know, the suitability, all that stuff. That's the main thing that's in the way right now. They have to all the forms.
Yeah, I mean, we're going through our own due diligence, of course, and then the government has to go through its process of all the administrative work for change of ownership, and there's a lot of it, and then also suitability, which are background checks for the people that will be, in essence, in control of the company, and there's a big background check that goes along with that, and it takes time.
Got it. Okay. So, you know, one of the things maybe we could kind of focus on here is once these deals close, you're going to be doing, you expect about 170 plus million revenue from the combined company.
That's correct.
And
that's correct.
In terms of EBITDA, you've mentioned some numbers, but maybe you could kind of talk about that again. And, you know, some of the ways where you can see how you can create some value, like what you can do to, you know, increase sales and profitability in some of these new acquisitions. What are some of the synergies that you see? And of course, finally, over what, how long would it take to realize those, you know, those synergies?
Sure. So as we bolt up these operating entities and business units that perform as are performing now, based on the unaudited financials that we've looked at, and of course that can change after audit, but based on those unaudited financials, we believe we'll be somewhere around 20% EBITDA. And that's without any synergies or economies of scale. And so upon closing, there are a lot of things that we could take advantage immediately to recognize some of those economies of scale and synergies. One, of course, is a lot of back office functions can be combined and run out of a corporate office, you know, payroll and accounting and HR and things of that nature. In addition, procurement can be combined so that we can have purchasing power in everything that we purchase, you know, from running our cultivations to wholesale products and the retail stores, which we'll have 34 of. We'll be the largest operator in Colorado and have a lot of purchasing power, and all those types of things. In addition, sales forces will be combined. Every manufacturing company, there's seven of them that we're acquiring, has their own sales force right now, their own sales managers. Those can be combined. And the territories that they operate are different. You know, one of them is in over 600 stores. That's the largest distribution that we have that's coming online. The smallest is 75 stores. Most of them range about 250 to 300 stores that they're in. But they're not the same territories. They're different. So when we combine those territories together, no doubt, and I don't have the unique number right now, but it's probably over 700 stores that these companies will be able to deliver into, or at least have eyes on our products. Whereas right now, most of them are on 250 or 300. I mean, that's more than doubling the eyes on the products and the distribution capability for these manufacturers. So we're going to see growth in revenue just because of the influence that we'll have by having, you know, must-have products on the shelf and say, listen, you need to try this too. We need some shelf space for it. So, you know, I think we're going to be able to get a lot of synergies there. Best practices. You know, we have Josh Hawk for indoor. He's known as the Steve Jobs of cannabis cultivation. A little Google search on Joshua Haupt, H-A-U-P-T, will reveal some great things. And so, you know, having that expertise, being able to go into these 12 different cultivations that we have, some of them are indoor, some of them are outdoor, but in the indoor ones, and say, okay, here's how we can make some pretty easy improvements to improve our capabilities here. Same with the outdoor. We have Bob DeGabriel, the largest producer of outdoor cannabis in North America right now. You know, he knows what he's doing in outdoor and greenhouse cannabis. We have others that are involved too. So the synergies that we're going to be able to get from the cultivation are great. Same with retail. We've already talked about procurement, the reach of that. And one thing that is easy to point out is that another law changed in Colorado. So delivery will become available in Colorado for the first time in 2020. And that is for medical marijuana only. In 2021, recreational marijuana will be allowed to be delivered in Colorado as long as local authorities approve it.
How will that, you know, Andy,
Colorado?
I'm sorry, I didn't. How will that impact your business? Because the delivery thing is starting to be like a big thing in California. Like, how do you see that, you know, affecting your business?
That's going to have a huge effect on us. I mean, the laws in Colorado are different than California. In California, you can order a product. Let's say, let's say it's your favorite gummy, and you say, "I want my favorite gummy delivered to my house." Well, you'll get it delivered to your house. In Colorado, you have to say, "Hey, I want my favorite gummy delivered," but you have to say what store it's delivered from. So, I want my favorite gummy delivered from this Medicine Man store that's over here in Montbello. And so, you have to have a presence around the state in order to take advantage of home delivery. We will have more stores by far than anybody else in the industry located in more places around the state. So we will have, I think, an advantage when it comes to home delivery just because of the reach that our distribution will have. And I think that's going to be a big chance for us to take even more market share in Colorado.
Okay. And what about in terms of some of the branded products? You know, the new acquisitions are going to include a lot of the branded products. So maybe you could kind of do a quick recap of some of the product lines and what percentage of your revenues are going to come from that kind of value added, the branded products.
Yeah, well, we're going to have over 120 branded products that are already in the market in Colorado and doing very well, that have survived the test of time when it comes to competition in Colorado, which is, you know, one of the most competitive markets in the country. And if you look at the wheel of market segments in edibles and concentrates, we're in most of them and certainly all of the major ones. And we have products that compete very well. So we have everything from chocolate and tinctures and candies and, vaporizers and, pills and little thin strips that melt on your tongue. And I mean, so many different ways to consume cannabis. You know, we're in all of these market segments and with products that are among the leaders in the state. So, there's not a market segment that we want to be in that we won't.
Okay. So, just to recap, so the EBITDA, once you're able to, realize the synergies, what are you expecting and when, how long would it take to get there?
Well, some of these synergies we can take advantage of right away, procurement and the thing I mentioned before. And then integration is going to have to take a little time. So when these companies come together, the integration process can start. We're not allowed to integrate prior to integration will begin. The ERP system will begin to be put into place. And over time, you'll see the organization change so that it's less of a business unit kind of organization to probably more of a functional one. In terms of where we can go in the EBITDA, I don't think it's proper of me to predict that right now. But I know that with our economies of scale and synergies that we're going to have, our EBITDA should be able to go up very nicely.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about, Colorado. So, right now, that's kind of where your focus is. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the market, like what's the size, the growth rates, and what makes Colorado unique compared to, California or, some of the other markets?
Yeah. So Colorado is going to be about a $1.7 billion market this year, the second largest behind California in the country. It's growing at about a 15% clip. I think that'll continue. And right now, if you look at Colorado, of the localities that allow for cannabis licenses, it's somewhere around half of the state that you'd see the ability to have a cannabis business within the the boundaries of those localities, because every locality has the option on whether or not to partake in the industry. And so over time, different municipalities or counties have watched the industry grow, have seen that it hasn't had a negative impact on different cities or municipalities that have been involved. They've actually seen a lot of positive results, including the taxes that result from it and the regulated and safe cannabis industry. And so that's going to continue to open up over time.
Jen.
Especially if there's ever a recession that comes along, I think a lot of municipalities will say, hey, this is something that can help us out right here. And so there's going to be organic growth that way. Of course, we have delivery that's going to pick up. I think that's going to increase, the sales of products in Colorado as well. And every single one of these operators that are coming together, these pioneers, they all have growth opportunities already. You know, one thing about the cannabis industry, if or not moving forward, you're not going to stay competitive. So all of these companies, because they're great operators, have their own organic growth plans that, we're going to have to rack and stack these opportunities and figure out the capital expenditure plan that we put in place to best take advantage of the opportunities in front of us. But each one of them have it for growth of the company in Colorado. But of course, Colorado is not our final destination.
So let's talk about that. What are your plans for, expanding outside of Colorado? Which areas might be next, and when?
Again, I don't think it's appropriate for me to say where we're going, and I can talk about the timing. Right now, we are laser focused on Colorado and getting the work that we have in front of us done so that we can close when we say we're going to close. And so when we're closed with these current group of acquisitions and integration is underway and I believe well in hand, we'll be looking outward from Colorado. And I like states that have well-regulated cannabis industries. And I love a free market as well. I think we compete very well and competition does not scare us. And so I love a free market. Is an exorbitant, and we can compete on a level playing field with everybody else. If you look at California, while it is the largest market in the United States right now, the legal cannabis laws are relatively new, and right now they are going through the process of fully implementing those regulations. So issuing licenses has been a problem. Enforcing regulations still is a problem today. There's still a black market that openly operates next to people who are following state regulations and paying taxes. It's very difficult to compete in a market where you're following all the laws and paying taxes, but you're competing directly against what in essence is a black market very openly. And so until California fully implements its laws and starts enforcing the regulation, California is a place that I really don't care to be. But that will happen over time, and I think we'll be able to move into California when the timing's right and take advantage of that market, not take advantage, participate in that market as well.
Okay. And what would you be looking for, in terms of, potential acquisition candidates? Like what are some of your criteria?
Well, it's a market by market basis. Colorado, we wanted full vertical integration. We wanted the supply because we didn't want to be held hostage for the supply of cannabis to us over time. This is, keep in mind, we're still under an intrastate commerce law. We can't get product from outside of the state. And so in order to make sure that we weren't held hostage in any aspect in Colorado, we wanted to be fully vertically integrated with everything that we needed in order to sustain our company. Now, other markets aren't quite the same. Like California, for instance, there's a plenty of supply. I don't think I would ever worry about not having supply in California. I wouldn't want to be in the retail side of California because of competing directly against what I consider the black market, but manufacturing there might be a good option. If we have the supply, marijuana in order to buy and extract and make products, you know, with all of the brands that we have under our umbrella that have been tried and true. I think we can do well in California with something like that. And so market by market, we'll be looking at it. And but I do look to take a meaningful position in a state, not a very light position where we have one or two stores. You know, I want a meaningful position where we have influence on the market so that we're not at the whims of the market. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. It does. Now you're, so right now you're going to be doing, let's say 100 and, you know, 170 million. So you're going to be roughly 10% of the Colorado market, which is the
yep.
1.7 billion. Said, okay. You know, there's constant talk about the state of the cannabis market. Is there you know, some places there's oversupply, some places there's shortages. You know, what is kind of the reality that you see like on the ground? What's from your perspective?
In Colorado, you're talking, correct?
Well, I guess that's yes. Let's say in Colorado, yeah.
Okay, so on the ground in Colorado. You know, every market is different, of course. We just mentioned that intrastate commerce is the rule. We can't do business over borders. And so you have to look at it market by market. In Colorado, in 2017 was really the, or no, 2018 was the lowest year for us in terms of cost per pound because supply was very high. And the cost per pound got down to about $600 for outdoor and $800 or $900 for indoor cultivation of cannabis. And it was very difficult to make money. You had to be really good, really efficient at growing cannabis in order to make a profit or even stay even in that market. So there were some people that went out of business, and the supply went down because of that. In addition, there was a late freeze in 2018 that put a damper on the outdoor crops that came in. And so the prices of marijuana in Colorado went up. And so this year we've been anywhere from $15 to $2,000 a pound for wholesale. And you know, the same thing happened this year. There was this year, the same thing happened. There was an early freeze in Colorado that the outdoor crops took a big hit. So I anticipate the prices of cannabis to remain about where they are throughout next year. So in Colorado, there is not an oversupply of cannabis. I think it's a nice balanced supply of cannabis right now.
Yeah, but, you know, the phone connection is a little rough. Now, you said there was basically a freeze.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. So it's been, the connection is a little slow. So there was a freeze last year and this year, and so the prices are roughly $1,500 a pound for outdoor.
Or more. Just on average.
Okay. So, you know, I think people need to keep in mind this is basically, you know, it's an agricultural product like, you know, wheat or soybeans. You know, you're kind of subject to the forces of nature.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And, of course, people being in business, did you hear that? Like, I talked about the prices going down and some people going out of business because they weren't efficient enough. And so the supply decreased because some people went out of business in Colorado as well.
Now, what's kind of the breakdown that you're going to have between outdoor and indoor growing?
It's going to be probably about 60, and this is a guess again, I'm somewhere around 60% or 65% outdoor, the remaining indoor. And I'm grouping greenhouse and outdoor together there.
Okay. Let's kind of finish up. You know, we've had quite a bit of interest from our audience, you know, regarding MedFarm. So can you talk about MedFarm, you know, what they're doing, what are some of the opportunities that they're working on?
Yeah, MedFarm is certainly a passion project for us. You know, this is a company that is very unique in the United States. It is a manufacturer in the cannabis industry, so they extract and create products that are sold in dispensaries and retail in Colorado, and they have really pharma-style products, tincture, pills, creams, things of that nature, and leading the Colorado market, at least in one category and among the leaders in others. So But what's very unique about this is, one, it's the only research licensee that also has a cannabis license. So a private researcher of cannabis, also tied to a cannabis license in the state of Colorado. And it's one of the only licenses for a private company in the United States. You know, only Pennsylvania has laws like it. And so they're growing marijuana, extracting and making products in order to make money and keep the doors open, lights on. But they're doing research behind the scenes too. And so the people we have there are phenomenal. Our chief formulations manager is a 35-year compound pharmacist. We have a PhD of medicinal chemistry with many other, you know, chemists and others that are there. And their first clinical trial, I believe are going to begin next year. And at least that's what they're planning. And the first
2020
going to start in 2020.
Okay, for what
is
indication?
Alzheimer's and dementia.
Okay.
And, you know, that's exciting. These are people that are working with the cannabis plant in order to find the formulation of the right compounds in the right dosage form to impact the human condition reliably and repeatably. And so through this research, hopefully find that formulation that we could take through the FDA process to create medicine. And it's exciting to be part of it. It's, you know, the goal I have for that company is one day one of the employees wins a Nobel Prize for medicine with cannabis. And, you know, it's exciting to be part of a company that can make humankind, you know, better in some way.
Yeah, excellent. Andy, let's kind of recap here. What can investors expect to see from Medicine Man in 2020, next year?
Well, you will see us, and there will be some announcements coming out soon, continue to march down the path of closing all of these acquisitions. We will get that done within the first half of the year and begin the integration and start realizing the synergies and economies of scale that we'll be able to bring to bear. And you will see us begin to move out from Colorado into other markets where I think we're going to be able to compete very well. That's what we're going to be focused on. And we will keep investors updated as much as we're absolutely able to do. And right now, I think our stock is undervalued compared to where we're going to be next year based on what we're doing. And I think it's a great time for investors to get involved with our company.
Excellent. Now, in terms of Colorado, you're not done with acquisitions in Colorado. You still see more opportunities there?
I do see more opportunities here. You know, right now we have a lot of work to do. There's a few strategic things that I may still look at as we go through this process. But you know, nothing solid right now.
Okay. So you kind of touched on it, but, you know, to summarize, you know, the last question, which is, you know, our favorite question here, is, you know, what, in your opinion, what are the key reasons why investors should consider Medicine Man stock today?
Well, you know, a lot of investors have been bitten by, I think, the marijuana craze that started by the licensed producers in Canada that went public. This is a different company than that. You know, those companies were founded by people that had money, that had business acumen and other attributes. But they didn't have experience in the cannabis space, and they used investors' money to buy into the cannabis space and to learn about it. They weren't focused on bottom line, and they were focused on top line revenue and footprint. And I don't think that's a formula that's sustainable. What we have here in Colorado, specifically with Medicine Man Technologies, is a group of pioneers that are coming together in this industry. These are people that started their businesses on their own money, their family's money, and their friends' money. And they had to make a profit. If they didn't, they wouldn't be able to stay in business. They didn't have a big pile of money to go to if they didn't make money. And so they had to make money. They've been focused on bottom line the entire time. And they've done it in an environment where they've had to grow the industry, protect it from people that were trying to hurt it, and do it in one of the most competitive markets in the country. These are true pioneers.
And you should pass.
All been for bottom line, and will continue to be so in the future. We have world-class experience in all fronts of the cannabis industry. That not only will give us, keep us competing and leading in Colorado, but I think it's going to give us an advantage as we go into states that don't have the mature markets that we have here in Colorado. We are going to be able to, I believe, take leadership positions in whatever state that we go to. That's the big difference. And we haven't had a huge run-up on our stock like a lot of these LPs did originally or whatever. I think cannabis investors are becoming more savvy, and they're waiting and seeing, making sure people are executing. And that's what's going on right now. We're going to execute. And as that happens, you'll see our stock appreciate, I believe.
Excellent. Andy, I want to thank you again. And, we look forward to hearing more from you in 2020.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I look forward to coming back and talking to you again.